Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
So the entire goal of Capital in the last 16 months was to convince everybody that a return to normal was possible, and then convince everybody that the return to normal had already happened. So we're back at normal. Everybody's going back to work. COVID's not real. Everything's fine. Even though we have more cases basically now than we've had in 6 months.
It's a pretty astounding how the media cycle is no longer pumping things like, all the beds are full and doctors need your help, because that story's old. That's last year's news. But it's quite literally the same news a year later. There are entire hospitals that are so overwhelmed they have no capacity. Now, yeah, we might have PPE, and yeah, we might have masks, and yeah, we might have, you know, more oxygen, but we don't actually have the means to treat everybody that's coming in with the new Delta variant. And by new Delta variant, I mean the variant that's been in India for
3, 4, 5, 6 months.
Yeah, a ton of time. And it came over to the United States because we lifted what?
Pretty much all social distancing protocols. You don't have to wear masks, you don't have to social distance. We actually, I think the public school standard is that kids, instead of doing the Pledge of Allegiance, are instructed to spit in each other's mouths, but a little fuzzy on the policy there.
Well, I mean, you've got it pretty much right. Right. That's about right. I mean, we've done everything we can to allow not only the variant to be created, and that's happened because we didn't actually take vaccinations seriously. And I'm saying that in all honesty. We took it as if it was something that was A, just going to happen, and B, would take care of itself. We ignored the rest of the world. We ignored the rest of the world's inability to take care of themselves. We hoarded all of the means of protection for ourselves. And as a result of that, we are basically paying for that selfishness.
And you're going to see this play out by having a petri dish that is the United States, where you have roughly half the population is vaccinated, and it creates the perfect breeding ground to create a variant that is vaccine resistant, or the vaccine doesn't work quite as well.
And that's called breakthrough.
And you're seeing this play out with the Delta variant, which is not necessarily vaccine breakthrough capable, but it's happening more and more and more and more. Is Delta the breakthrough variant, or is there going to be another one?
You know, I want to say that Delta is the first of many breakthrough variants, because I can see one of two other possibilities happening. We just saw that report out of South Korea that basically said that if you got the AstraZeneca and then you got the Pfizer shot, it had less breakthrough than if you just had the Janssen or the Pfizer themselves, which means that people are going to try to do the Janssen, Moderna, and what Janssen, I mean the J&J, the Johnson & Johnson shot with, or AstraZeneca shot with a Pfizer or Moderna shot. So what I'm getting at is they're going to try to mix vaccines. So one is the adenovirus that's been modified to have the viral payload for corona on there. The other is the mRNA, which is basically the best of both worlds when you're getting both shots. So I think what might happen is the areas that are going to have the mRNA and the adenovirus mixture may actually have a breakthrough in which there is no known vaccine, potentially. The other is that we're coming into, at least in the United States, school time. Canada, North America is going back to school. I could see that you have vaccinated parents who get, like, basically a festering child's gross COVID because now they're in school passing it around, and you get another breakthrough. Those are the two that I see. Now, we can argue that, yeah, we could say China might get it, India might get it, Brazil might have it, South America, whatever these other areas are, they might make their own. But I'm saying just in the United States, I see those as possibilities. Like, even India, we're not even seeing how fucked up India is. India is still out of control. They don't even have enough wood to burn bodies. They have a lot of wood because they have jungles. They don't have enough wood that's dry to burn bodies there still.
So what's unique about the U.S. is that the U.S. has a relatively high vaccination rate relative to other countries. So the U.S.'s vaccination rate of 50, 60, 70%, depending on what sub-demographics you include and how many shots you count, whatever. It's significantly more than the vaccination rate of, let's say, India, for example.
Or even Canada.
So while India is raging, and lots of cases per capita, there isn't the likelihood of an escape variant because the virus doesn't have exposure to a vaccinated population group, whereas that is the case in the United States.
The problem with India is that...
Just one problem.
Sorry, the problem right now is that India had, as of 2020, July of 2020, they had 50,000 new cases, an average of 48,000 a day, July 1st. As of July 1st this year, they've had 46,000 on average a day. So in a whole year, they have not done anything to combat it. Their average daily.
And there's ebbs and flows between that year.
Yep. And the worst case was back in May when we saw that it were getting like 380,000 new cases a day. Now, what I don't know, and again, you know, they've had 200 million cases of this worldwide that's been validated.
Which means you are rich enough to actually afford a COVID test.
Yes. That you could actually get a test. Yes. India is a piece of shit neoliberal hellscape that's both a rising second world country and a like neoliberal almost like fiefdom type like colonial shithole. And we're not saying the people there are, we're saying that the government has created this. We have this really intense bimodal distribution of the billionaires and the not like the poor. Like there really isn't a middle class in India, really. And to this point. Now we can argue what those segments are, we can talk about per capitas, but think about India. Yes, you've been to New Delhi, fine. We've all been to India for manufacturing trips, we get it. But the people that actually have the money, like there's not as many people with sustainable jobs there as per capita than most other quote unquote like second or first world nations. What this comes down to is that again, the breakthrough variant happened from a third world nation because the first world nations decided not to take care of them too. And there's only two ways of doing this. You either can take care of the whole world or you have to end all travel.
There's no middle ground.
You cannot say that we're not going to help India or Mexico, but we're also going to let them come over here because they had a test that was negative. Well, I can make a test that's negative because the test doesn't have to say anything. It could just be a stick I cram in my nose.
You can buy a Q-tip and get a squirt bottle of saline and like do your own test and be like, ah, it's fine.
It's fine. This is the lab of no COVID has said this is real.
So the COVID breakthrough progression was vanilla COVID. You have a mutation that occurred in a third world, which is India. That mutation has slight breakthrough capability that is affecting the U.S.'s vaccinated population. And our premise is that over time, the Delta variant will mutate into some other escape variant that will be much more vaccine resistant. And that's when all hell will break loose because capital and the media have conditioned the entire U.S. population to believe that COVID's over. So how do you go back on that propaganda that's been in existence for 16 months and say, actually, no, this new variant is fucking terrible and you need to take this seriously? When everything that you've been led to believe tells you that you don't need to take anything seriously. You can go hang out in Chicago with 400,000 of your closest friends.
The best part about this is, you know, we're talking about the Lambda variant, and as of August 2nd in a Reuters article, there is a Lambda variant was first identified in Peru and now spreading in South America. It's highly infectious and more resistant to the vaccine than the original version of the virus that emerged from Wuhan. So guess what? The more time we spend fucking around with vaccinations and lifting mask ordinances and all these things, the more likely is we're going to have a spread or a variant.
So based on my relatively limited understanding of the Lambda variant, the Lambda variant is not a derivative of the Delta ancestry. It's a distinct mutation that is not Delta, but it has mutated in a manner that is more resistant to vaccines. These two variants coexisting will not play out long term. One will become dominant.
Yes. In any type of linear stability studies, you're going to look for, when you perturb a system, the fastest growing wavelength will become the dominant wavelength. And just like the fastest growing variant will become the dominant one. That's literal modeling. That's how it works. That means that the race to infect is on between the two variants because their livelihood, their survival depends on infection. Their livelihood or their, and we'll say it that way, like the virus needs to replicate, and the only way for that to happen is to jump from host to host to host to host to host and infect everybody to maintain itself. If you have, let's say, a Delta variant in your house and you have a vaccine and that person keeps coughing in your face, eventually during one of the replications, it'll have a variation or a mutation that allows it to infect your body. That's exactly how it spreads.
Like, that's a statistical thing, because mutations occur as viruses are literally replicating, and there are errors basically copying proteins.
Yep.
That's literally what a mutation is.
And sometimes the mutations are deadly to the virus. Sometimes it makes them not perform better or worse. Sometimes they just exist and they die off. Or sometimes they actually are better.
And there's different incentives for why a certain mutation becomes prevalent or not prevalent. In the case of Delta, you're seeing Delta become widespread globally because it's highly infectious, because it's the most infectious COVID variant in existence. And you're seeing the Lambda variant, which appears to be less contagious in terms of what their reproductive value is. But if it's able to infect people that might not be susceptible to it based on some other chemistry, then it's more contagious in a different way. The example to use is if you have 10 people in a room, one of them gets Delta, chances are everybody's going to get Delta. But if you have 10 people in a room and they all have a certain, let's say, immunity, let's say they've already had COVID, let's say they have the vaccine, and you put Delta in there, maybe it doesn't reproduce as quickly. But let's say you put the Lambda variant in there and all 10 get it. Suddenly it's more contagious in a different way. And I don't want to imply that that's how either of these variants actually work. The mutations and the incentives created by virus mutations have different incentives, where one is how quickly does it spread amongst the general population? How quickly does it spread amongst a vaccinated population? How quickly does it spread in the Horn of Africa with a population that has sickle cell disease and there's some genetic trait? Those are all things that condition a mutation to survive versus another mutation.
And because this is worker movement, we want to bring this back to the worker, you know, as we talk through this issue. Essentially, we have two, I guess, insane groups of people. And I say insane because they are basically pushing for the same end result. One is that you get back to work and you come back to work in person. And yes, in manufacturing, yes, in Tyson chicken plants, who have now said everybody has to be vaccinated to come back to work. Car salesmen and all these places, you know, service industry, you have to be back at work. But there are lots of individuals who don't need to be in the office who are getting pressure to return. So we have one group of capital that's basically trying to increase productivity by forcing people back to work. So all the individuals that enjoyed a nicer commute because there wasn't many cars on the road, or enjoyed, you know, more opportunities to spend time with their family at home because you were working at home, now find themselves needing to go back to work, but also having a vaccine mandate, but not a mask mandate, which I find to be absolutely mind-fucking crazy. Because we all know that the vaccines were tested when you follow social distancing and mask wearing. So if we have breakthrough variants and you get an injection in your arm that says, oh, you're good, you're not actually good unless you wear a mask and you socially distance. And that goes with the other group of people, the lawmakers in conservative areas, or even the people who are basically condemning mask wearing, basically trying to pass laws that are removing the absolute ability to protect yourself. And then people crying, oh my God, there's small businesses, you can't boycott them. Here's the thing, if they don't require a mask and you're a worker and you have to go to work, wear a mask anyways. And guess what? If you have money and you can go shopping someplace and you go to a store that has some dumbass sign that says no mask required here, guess what? Don't go. Bleed them dry. Because the only way that you can fight capital is with capital, and the only way to do it is through boycotting. And tell your friends and go tell these businesses to go the fuck themselves too, because there's no reason to go there. There's no reason to go out to eat. There's no reason to use Uber Eats. There's none of that. Just fuck capital at this point in time.
So capital has spent their entire 16 months conditioning workers to believe that everything is fine.
Absolutely.
If we didn't have the Delta variant, maybe everything is fine. But that's not real life, because the Delta variant exists. The posturing of don't wear a mask that DeSantis in Florida is saying, and tying it to school funding, like you're a school and you can't mandate a mask or you're not going to get school funding, is absolutely counterproductive to capital's effort to return to normal. It doesn't make any sense. Sending the entire working class population into the meat grinder to, like, literally get sick with COVID eventually, be a resource drain, I guess, on hospitals, doesn't benefit anybody. Like, I don't know who's winning as a result of this.
I guess for DeSantis, he's got two or more pressures. He's got his electorate who is demanding blood, plus he's insane himself. And his donor class may not really be billionaires necessarily. They may be hundreds of millionaires who are like the Miami, you know, Condo Owners Association or something. So he may be providing cover for them. I really don't know, because like you're right, like the other part is the people that donate to him might not actually benefit or get hurt by his policies. the Condo Builders Association might not actually get hurt by the fact that nobody's wearing a mask. And they might not even care because it might be just, you know, everybody works outside or they bring in undocumented workers and they just skirt tax laws. They might not even care.
I think there's definitely a segment of the business population that does not give a shit about whether workers live or die.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, in a capitalist society, workers are needed to be exploited. Is capital's argument that there's enough expendable workers that you can just lose 300,000 people every year and it's fine?
Well, who are they losing? They're losing elderly people who don't spend money because they're fixed income. And they're losing, I guess, podunk rural dickheads. I'm not sure who they're losing. Because if you think about it from the demographics of the petite bourgeois, they're either working from home or they're masking up anyways, or they're vaccinated, right? Because they have access to it. It's really just the lower class and the lower class conservatives who are not masking up, and maybe they don't spend money. Maybe they don't give a shit because it's not the demographic that actually spends money. They care about the Republicans getting in power because it gives them tax laws and all the shit they love to get from Republicans, but at the same time hate the base because the base doesn't actually give them any type of monetary relief.
And you see this play out a little bit with corporate mandates to get vaccinated. So Walmart came out and said that everybody working in a corporate office, your white-collar workers at Walmart, needs to be vaccinated. But if you work in a store, you don't have to be vaccinated. It's a literal statement by a massive corporation just saying, we literally don't care whether the worker that is being exploited the most, which are those that work in the retail setting, the service environment that is Walmart, we literally do not care about their well-being, and we don't care if they die because they're replaceable. They can be exploited. You just pluck the next person in line. Our business keeps churning. The meat grinder keeps turning. We don't give a shit. And I think that's where DeSantis's argument is effectively coming from, is not based on any logic. It's purely based on, I just don't care.
I don't care. You're expendable. I don't care. The people that are dying, I don't care. You're old. I don't care. You're already sick. We don't care because you're draining the system. You're poor. We don't care. You don't donate to me. You don't give me any wealth. You're not buying what I'm selling. Who gives a shit? I hope you die.
Or I don't care if you die. Like, I just don't care. It seems like it's work to care about COVID deaths, and I don't really feel like doing anything. And politically, I probably don't have to, so eh.
Yeah.
The one last point I want to make about all these false incentives with COVID is when resource allocation reaches the point where there are too few hospital beds, what entity is deciding who to treat? Because it's not the government. It's a for-profit hospital in most cases, doing some sort of life expectancy calculation on who's more worthy of life.
Or VIP donation calculation, too.
You bought a VIP ticket to Lollapalooza, so we have a wing of the hospital just for you.
Do you know who my dad is, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Do you know who I am?
Yes, right.
Oh, right this way, sir.
Right, yeah, come on to your wing, yeah. Hey, here's some experimental drugs to save your life. Because who has access to things like the experimental platelet drugs or whatever they are, right?
Only rich people.
Yeah, it's not you and I, right? What we're seeing now is a fast build-up to this nonsense vaccine combinations, but a very slow deployment of it, because there's no way to deploy to the whole world. And what we saw was the first world nations basically getting put first in line to not die. It's like literal imperialism because they weaponized the vaccination. If we would have just like sat at home and canceled everything for like 6 or 8 weeks and all wore masks and canceled all travel internationally and literally just locked the country down for like 8 weeks like China did, the virus wouldn't have spread as fast as it did or wherever it spread to. But because we keep allowing it to fester like an open wound, we've not taken care of the problem. And the problem is that we keep having cases. Until we're like New Zealand and have zero cases a day, we're not healed. Like, there's no way to keep it from spreading. That's why it's such a big deal when people get, like, the plague. Because the plague is supposed to be eradicated. It's in random animals here or there. But they will shut down entire areas and regions if somebody gets the plague. Because they don't want the spread. The same methodology should be applied here to COVID. Shut the whole damn thing down. We shut down. It would have been cheaper in the long run to have 6 or 8 weeks of actual just paid time off through the government, right? And I'm saying this speaking to you in neoliberal terms. As an actual militant leftist, shutting it down, it wouldn't have mattered. But shut it down, keep it the neoliberal construct, you know, everybody gets their check or whatever it happens to be, businesses, whatever it is, would have been a lot better. Because then we could have actually fought and found a real vaccination. But instead, we push it through the door as fast as we could. We got something that, I guess, has protection, but now allows for the variants to basically make it irrelevant. you know, I propose that we could have just locked down the countries in the first 8 weeks once we discovered it. But again, we had a vaccination come through, like, 12 months later, sometime later. What we should have done is instead of just prolonging this very long vaccination program, we could have just locked down the country right when the vaccination came out under high dosage and injected everybody in one swoop. Boom, 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 high injection rate, and try to get as much of the population vaccinated in the shortest amount of time as possible. Because then we basically slow down the spread so much that there cannot be any type of variant creation. Why? Because it can't be fostered within any one group of people, because most people are vaccinated, which will just basically damp the entire system down. At the end of the day, you're in charge of your own safety. I hate the individualistic idea of this. The individual does matter here, but also society does. Wear your mask, get vaccinated, wear your mask, social distance. If you want to be real safe, wear an N95 mask. Why? It filters out 95% of the particles less than 5 microns, which is the standard of the virus. And they're cheap now. They're no longer $3 a piece. They're like 50 cents. So the reason why we're pushing the N95 is that when you wear it N95, you help others and yourself because you're filtering both incoming and outgoing air. Right? Every time you take a breath, it filters. If you wear just a regular surgical mask, you're helping others because it filters your big particulates outwards, but it also traps the large particles coming inwards, so it's not really helping you by wearing a mask if someone sneezes in your face. It's really helping the person across you. So again, wear an N95 mask.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.